Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy, 2017, Episode 16.
And now, the end is near, and so I face the final curtain.
Do you think when Mike Riley goes home every single night that he has this song going through his head?
I stayed my case, of which I'm certain I've lived.
One thing is for sure, he's done it his way and passing the football instead of running it past the Huskers, the game against Northwestern, and more likely, Riley, his job.
It's more than this, I did it my way.
I'm Travis Justice. Welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy. Now, since we started this weekly show a couple of years ago, almost 1.2 million listens. Why? We keep it real, we keep it fun with stuff like this.
What I had to do, saw it through, without exemption.
Exactly. And we drink a lot of beer. Dr. Rob Saniska, you're just shaking your head.
Oh, God, that's funny.
When I started that song, you were looking at me like,
what the hell?
And you got it after about the third line of Elvis. I know it's originally a Frank Sinatra song, but I think Elvis brings it much better than Frank Sinatra does.
He definitely has that sort of that softer, melancholy edge to it.
Yeah, yeah. We might hear more from Elvis a little bit later on, maybe towards the end of this podcast.
Frank sort of had that like, yeah, screw you. I'm doing it my way, bitches.
Yeah, and Elvis is kind of like the Mike Riley singing like, oh my God, I'm so melancholy, and it's really
I'm out of here.
All right, I'm done. Dr. Rob, I want to read a text you sent me on Saturday, and here's the verbatim text you sent to me. I'm here watching a very talented Nebraska team play a not very talented Northwestern team, and it's basically a tie because Northwestern has far better coaching and effort.
Yes. I tweeted that as well, too, maybe in sort of a used a little different verbiage, but essentially said the same thing, that you watch that game, and I'm not saying that Nebraska's got Ohio State talent or that we've got Alabama talent, but it was god-awfully evident how much more talent, how much more speed Nebraska had than Northwestern. And I'm watching the game, and I'd see Northwestern's offensive line, which actually after watching that game, that might be the strength of their team, is their offensive line. It's a very disciplined, very well-coached group of offensive linemen, and you would see him open up a hole. You would see Justin Jackson hit that hole, and the thought going through my mind every time was, what I'm referencing here is the obviousness and the size of the holes. It's not like he was squeezing through cracks. It's you would see these holes open up, and the thought going through my head was, oh, dear God, he's gone. Oh, never mind. It was only a 3-yard gain because he's really quick, but he runs like a 5.7 40-yard dash. And even when they were getting the ever-loving shit kicked out of him, Nebraska's defense was still able to close up after only a 3 or 4-yard gain. Now, that being said, when you're seeing that kind of talent gap, and they still rush for over 230 yards against us, it just... That's coaching and effort. Nothing more than that.
The amazing thing is Northwestern won its third straight game in overtime. Nebraska, with really a chance to win it, all it had to do was really run the football, kick a field goal, take a 10-point lead, make it a 2-possession game, and that thing's over with.
Or as I like to say, all they had to do is block and tackle. Like maybe block a stun on a max pass protection when you got a first down at the 19-yard line going in. Maybe don't pass the ball right there.
Of course, Mike Riley and his entire offensive coaching staff has had a chance to review the tape, look at it, maybe has some second thoughts, and he had this to say about his play calling on Saturday.
We would all like to have plays back when you don't win. And so you can, as we will, analyze all of that once again. Like, I think that the first down call had a great shot for a touchdown pass, believe it or not, and we would have all liked that call. We had a good protection called. The you know, I think the one that everybody thinks about and that really hurt us was the sack off the screen. And that one, that brings a valid question up. But at the same time, you know, that formation, that play at that time is all about the execution of it.
Just run the damn football. That's all you got to do. Don't try to justify your calls.
It's about the execution. And here's the thing. The players aren't executing. And it's on multiple levels and at multiple times all throughout the game. And you can, you know, we can sit here and dissect the coaching calls when it comes down to, well, should they have gone with that play? Should they have gone with this play? But it's on multiple levels. Why haven't we seen physical development? Why are you not seeing the effort and motivation that you'd like to see? Why are we running on first down a pass play?
Makes no sense.
I just don't get it. When it's been, he had already thrown two interceptions at that point. It's not like Northwestern's defense wasn't keyed into what we were doing. They're obviously a well-prepared team. You've got more talent than they do. You've got more size and speed and strength than they do. And that's not saying much because I still think Nebraska is sadly underdeveloped in that regard. But they're better than what Northwestern's got. Line up and pound the ball down their throat the whole game.
Hey, the Remington Trophy is presented annually to the nation's top center. This year's Remington Trophy presentation is January 13, 2018 at the Rococo, or 2018 rather, at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. In the next couple of weeks, we should have the announcement on who the guest speaker is going to be, as well as the Ford Legends Award winner. For more information, go to RemingtonTrophy.com. Time now for this week's Remington Trophy Watchlist Spotlight. And this week, we feature Brian Allen from Michigan State, 6'2", 295 pounds. And Rob, as you're going to point out, he comes from a pretty good football family.
Well, his older brother, Jack, was a two-time All-American center for Michigan State. It's like I know all about the Allen family. I'm a little bit of a fanboy here. No, but older brother Jack plays for the Saints. Now, Brian has played, started his sophomore year at guard, most of his junior year at center. Now at center again as a senior. Played, I think, about half a dozen, five or six games at right guard as well, too. I mean, another one of those guys who's bounced around. It's kind of a cool story when you look at the family, because we've talked a lot about some of these guys who've played multiple positions. They've played guard. They've maybe played even a little bit of tackle. They're playing some center. This guy played guard because he had to wait for his two-time All-American brother to graduate before he could move over and take over that center spot. But these guys started next to each other 2 years ago. So Brian at guard, Jack at center. And then they've got a younger brother, Matt, who's currently a redshirt freshman on the offensive line as well, who I don't know if Matt's going to be as good as Jack and Brian are, but, you know, if he follows the bloodlines, he's probably going to be pretty damn good.
He's 6'2", 295, too. He's more in that center size. Dude, a lot of the guys we've had is 6'5", 315, 320.
And Jack was kind of that same build. These were not the 6'4", 6'5 guys. These guys are your prototypical center guard kind of players.
That means that we are drinking a beer!
Fusion Brewing Company is the official beer provider of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. Tonight, we're drinking the Apple Plum Sour. Cool, crisp, and will take a lot to get you hammered because it's 3.9% alcohol by volume.
That's it?
That's it.
Oh,
you know
that's
what?
No fun.
People don't think of sours for falls. This is a good fall sour.
This is an excellent sour, which, again, my cousin Matt in Columbus is going to give me shit about this because he's... The fact that there is plum in the title, but if you like the occasional hard cider, this is a really good one.
Yeah, you know, and you and I fall into, we like the sours, and
I like a sour beer.
This isn't overly sour. It's just crisp.
Yeah, this is a great fall beer.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, crisp is the right word. We've had a couple, last few weeks, we've had a lot of kind of the stuff that falls into that the holiday beers, the stouts, the heavy beers, the sweet beers, the spicy beers. This is a nice nice, clear, crisp, sour beer. This would be a great one midsummer. This would be a great one in the fall. Kind of the fruit tones aren't, I mean, it's not heavy at all.
No.
You told me, I asked, what are we drinking tonight? And you said, we're having the apple plum sour. And I'm like, okay, well, let me go put on my pink tutu before we go drink.
There's nothing wrong with pink tutus. We are in touch with our feminine side here on the Husker Doc Talk podcast.
We're in touch hard.
Yes, we are. Will you pour me another one, please, sir?
Yeah, I don't even know what I meant when I said that. But it's a good beer. I like it.
Will you pour me another one? You're such a nice guy. Hey, don't forget the Infusion Brewing Company is the official beer provider of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. And make sure to tell the good folks at Infusion Brewing Company you heard about them on the Husker Doc Talk podcast. Why? Well, because we just like them to know that us talking about them works a little bit. And you can get the Apple Plum Sour at both locations. The original location on Maple Street in Benson and the brewery tap room out in Southwest Omaha. For more information on all the Infusion Brewing Company beers, go to infusionbrewing.com. It was the middle of last week when Ticket Express officially celebrated their 25th anniversary. Chad Carr started this business when he was a student at the University of Nebraska. He was selling pizzas, selling tickets for 25 years. I mean, before there was StubHub, there was Ticket Express. And I don't go to StubHub. I go to Ticket Express. In fact, Chad helped me out last week. My sister-in-law wanted to go to the Ohio State game. Four tickets right on nice. 12 rows up. Great tickets to watch that ass pounded, which was Iowa over Ohio State.
You said ass pounded.
But I'm telling you, when you need tickets to sporting events, to concerts, to anything, no event is ever sold out. And we just want to say congratulations to Chad Carr and all his employees at Ticket Express for 25 years of getting Husker fans into the games when they didn't think they could. Another great Husker supporter is Husker Hounds. Scotty at Husker Hounds has three locations in the Omaha area. The holidays coming up, so you might need a Husker hoodie. You might need a Husker jersey. You might need a Husker lampshade. Scott has it all, from footballs to helmets to everything in between. That's right. Husker Hounds, three locations. Go to huskerhounds.com. So they lose, Rob, and the talk quickly turns to what's next. People are talking about Mike Riley in the past tense. There is no forward thinking.
There was sort of that finality, yes, nail in the coffin.
There was.
Feel.
But, you know, as a coach, how do you deal with that? And this is what Riley says about dealing with, well, the noise.
I know I'll get questions about the state of our team, and my expectations are is that we'll have a great week of practice. I think that, you know, this is a great time for all of us to not be controlled by our circumstances, but be controlled by the moment of what we get to do. I'm excited to get back to work with our team this afternoon and get ready to go. And I expect with this group, as we've had a great enthusiasm for the work as we get going, you know, I think that we have good, responsible older guys in the leadership that will show the way in that way. And then I think that, you know, our younger players are tuned in and have been excited to play and can see some growth that they're making themselves individually.
How do you read into that?
He's fired and he knows it, and yep, he's been told that.
I with you, because they asked him today at the news conference, have you had in-depth conversations with Bill Moose?
And he said yes, but he said it was of a private nature.
That I'll let you know later on, which is, you're gone.
Yeah, that's, hey, we had a discussion, and I'm here. I'm here through the end of the season, and that's the end of it. And he knows that, you know, we talked last week about what Moose said about
Scott Frost.
Yeah, and it was one of those, when you listen to that statement, it was basically a, here's my post-hiring explanation of why I hired Scott Frost. And what you heard right there from Mike Riley was, hey, you know what, when the decision's been made, there's a little bit of pressure that's off. And when you listen to interviews with Bo Pelini, because there was about a 2-year run there where Bo thought he was fired.
And he was cinched up. His sphincter was tight.
You never saw a guy with a tighter ass than that. He was, I mean, I'd say walking on eggshells. Screw eggshells. He was tiptoe. He was Bruce Willis and Die Hard tiptoeing on broken glass for the better part of 2 years there. It was painful listening to any interview with him because of that uncertainty. And everything that he did was completely amplified under a microscope. And I think a lot of the angst that you saw come out of Pelini came from that.
Let me ask
and
you.
And what I, but well, hold on.
Okay.
Give me two seconds here. When I listen to what Riley said right there, and when I hear what he has to say, once that decision's been made, that walk on an eggshells is over. The pressure's gone. You know what's going to happen. It's a done deal. I'm going to do what I'm going to do between now and the end of November, and that's going to be it. And I hate saying it, there's a small amount of peace there once that decision's been made, and that's what I hear in his voice. Now, I could be wrong, but I'm telling you that's what I hear, and especially when you couple it with what he said about his meeting with the athletic director, where he basically admitted that, yes, I had an in-depth conversation with Bill Moose, and a fair amount of it was of a private nature that we'll talk about later.
Yeah, when he said we'll talk about it later, that immediately set up a red flag. Oh, you've already been fired.
Yeah,
that's the way I interpreted it.
That's how I interpreted it as well. And it's not like you haven't been covering this stuff for, oh, I don't know, a couple of years.
It's not like we haven't seen this before.
Yeah, but I mean, you look at what you've done in the sports broadcasting world. You've got 25 years of following this stuff.
Yeah.
When have you ever heard that and had it not be a firing?
Never. Yeah. Never.
Or resignation, et cetera, something like that. The job's done.
You know, and I still go back and forth, and I get why it's happening. But is it fair? I mean, you know, Bill Callahan took a beating because he was bullheaded, and he never fired anybody, and he never adapted. He came in right away, had the talent to win.
Fair doesn't have anything to do with it.
I know, but let me finish it. You know, he rammed his West Coast system, and it didn't work, and they had a losing season. Now, there was if he would have adapted, he would have won 6 or 7 games that first year and gone to a bowl game. Mike Riley comes in.
Well, and if he had adapted it and changed his, was willing to make changes on his staff, i.e. Kevin Cosgrove.
That's, he might have lasted longer.
I think we could have seen a 7 or 8 year Bill Callahan era.
So Mike Riley comes in. He goes, oh, okay, I got Tommy Armstrong. I have players that don't run my system, but I'll adapt and kind of let them coexist till
he tried.
He fires people. He tries.
He made a legitimate effort, which I hate saying this. I don't think he's that good of a coach.
I think that's fair. Now, he says,
I think he's an excellent person. I think he's an okay coach, but he's not a good coach.
Well, as it's been laid out, where has he been successful?
Nowhere. And he's, like I said, he's had these little spurts that almost make you think it could happen. I mean, last year he had 9 wins. The year before he had some of these improbable upset wins. You look, he had, what was it, like 05, 06, 07, or 06, 07, 08, 09, where he had like,
yeah,
one, like an 8-win, 2 9 wins, and a 10-win season at Oregon State, something like that. He had that little 4-year spurt at Oregon State that made you think, ah, this guy's a pretty good coach. And then 2 guys graduated and everything kind of came crashing down around him.
Now, he says the scoreboard may not show it and people watching the stands may not see it, but the guys really are getting better.
What happens with us productivity wise may not reflect all the time the growth that we're getting from individuals within that picture. You know, like when I mentioned guys that have played well, you know, I think that you're seeing a guy like Mick Stoltenberg in this new nose tackle deal growing as the season goes on, you know, and Dedrick and Chris Weber have been just like that in the interior. So there are parts of it. There are other parts of it that aren't moving as fast as we probably need to or want to. We could look at it now and say that's sort of natural with the change, but our job now is to just make it continue to grow.
Well, and I'm not saying that there's not those things happening, but there's a big picture. And you get hired and fired and changes get made and dollars and cents flow based upon big pictures. You look at Callahan. I mean, there was things that Callahan did that I look back on and I'm like, hey, those were some really good things that happened under Bill Callahan. There were some really good things that happened under Bo Pelini. There were some good things happening here under Mike Riley. But are we improving overall collectively as a team and as the program moving forward to a degree of relevancy within the college football world? No, not even close. Absolutely not. And that's what you want.
Yeah, I mean, they become almost, I'm not going to say the laughing stock, but nobody takes him serious at all anymore. The national media doesn't take him serious. Hell, the local media doesn't take him serious anymore. Fans don't take him serious anymore.
Travis, I left the game in the fourth quarter to go out to the parking lot because my son was like, hey, Dad, let's go grill some chicken wings. I was like, hey, you know what? That's better than watching this. I did it right after that interception. When I saw that, I remember telling my son, I was like, hold on, we just got the ball. We're driving. We're gonna go up by two scores. Oh, wait, never mind. Tanner and threw an interception. Let's go grill chicken wings and drink beer.
So as you're walking out, are fans saying anything to you? Like, Dr. Rob, where are you going? Dr. Rob, what are you doing?
No. I'm kind of anonymous now, but
there's no way. You're 6'5", and you're not. Trust me, you're not anonymous.
It's just the product that I'm seeing, and don't get me wrong, I still care. And part of the reason I walk out is because it hurts to see this. It really does. As a former player, it's painful to watch this on an emotional level.
But you are.
I have trouble. I would rather not watch it. I turn the radio on. I listen to Matt and Greg. They give me the details over the radio waves. So I sat there having a beer, grilling chicken with my kid, and I had a nicer end of the game than I would have watching what happened at the very end of the fourth quarter in that absolute freaking disaster of an overtime. Remember when they first came out with overtime? We're like, oh, this is going to be so cool. And Nebraska went like five or six straight overtimes without losing one. I think we're 0-3 now?
Is that what it is? All I know is that Northwestern's won three straight. Well, but you are a former player that does a podcast on a weekly basis we have almost, since we started this thing, almost 1.3 million listens, so people are listening to this thing. We only do it during the season. But you're pretty cerebral in your approach, and you're pretty thoughtful. I don't want to put you in a tough situation here, but, Jason Peters, a guy that's been very outspoken. Are his thoughts good for a program and the way he speaks them?
I think I tweeted this on Saturday because Jason's got a handful of like text strings going with a bunch of guys, and I'm on one, and it's myself, my brother Jason Hoskinson, a couple of other guys, and we're texting back and forth during the game, and I mean the thought went through my head, and when I tweeted this out there, I was thinking about it. So Jason did the Big Red Breakfast this week.
Yeah, he did it with Mike Warren.
Michael Sevier.
Yeah, yes.
Moderating, and did it with Steve Warren. Also an outstanding defensive lineman for Nebraska. I don't know if I think the same way Jason does, in the sense that Jason's basically, let's bring back a former Nebraska player to be the AD and a former Nebraska guy to be the head coach and all former Nebraska guys to be the assistant coaches, and we're just going to gut the whole house and you're going to fill it up with all former Nebraska players. It's a little more complicated than that. And I don't think the same way Jason does, but I'll say this. All of us as former players, we all feel the same way.
I know what you're saying.
And I don't know if that makes sense, but on an emotional level, we all feel the same way Jason does. And there's few guys that care as much as Jason cares, but I feel the same way he feels about it.
So I guess sometimes I see a lot of these 97 guys, especially, who sometimes I think they want Scott there because they think they're going to be closer to the program or be allowed close. And I don't necessarily think that's the case. I think be careful. I'd actually want Scott to be the head coach.
Yeah, I do too. Now, here's the thing. Scott doesn't run what Rob Zadiska wants, which I want Wisconsin South, or as I like to call it.
Yeah.
Nebraska North, but that's what I want. That is not what Scott runs.
No,
that is not his style.
But what I'm talking about is players think that they're going to be able to go to practice, hang around. But I don't think it's going to be like
that. We can
that.
Do that now.
I know that, but I think they think they're going to have that extra.
Because
I went to school with him.
I don't think there's a lot of guys that do truly think that. I'm sure there's a few. Because I heard a rumor about Scott getting an offer,
which wouldn't surprise me.
No, and this was like fifth hand. Which I mean, it's pretty. I mean, it's nothing complicated. It's fifth hand info, so I have zero proof. I can't nail down the veracity of this at all. But I heard that they made an offer and asked for a response by the first week in December. Is what I was told. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. I hope it is. And the reason I hope it is...
That'll be north of $5 million.
Yeah, I'm sure it probably is. But the reason I hope it's true, it has nothing to do with the fact that I want to be closer to the program. I mean, I did not actually play with Scott. My first year in the NFL was Scott's redshirt year back in Lincoln. So... Now, I know Scott. I'm not even close to being what you'd call beer-drinking buddies with the guy. But if we're in the same room, I'm going to walk up and say hello. He'd know who I was. I know who he is, etc. But I think most of the guys who are old beer-drinking buddies with him, I don't think they look at it in that regard, but I think they look at it as, hey, he's one of us, and here's a guy who...
Or in some cases, riverboat gambling buddies.
Well, yeah, that's true too. Hey, you got to have a vice. I drink beer with you, dude.
That's true.
So I guess here's how I look at it. So you look at those guys in '97, and if anything, I feel like I and the guys who are there early 90s through 94 have a bigger stake in it, because I feel like we're the ones who came in and kind of looked around and said, hey, this is a pretty good situation. You got Nebraska who's winning conference titles. I mean, I think almost every player who went through there from... Yeah, maybe not 73, but definitely 74 onward has at least one conference title.
Yeah, well, through 99.
Through 99. So, no, and that's my point is that, so you had all these guys who played for Osborne. Every single guy who played for Osborne got at least one conference title. I remember when we won it in 91... Guys were ready to pull out razor blades. It was one of those, oh my God, we haven't won a conference championship in so long. Do you know when the last conference championship was prior to 91?
88.
88, 3 years. And we were we felt like we were destitute for a championship.
I mean, think about it. You're coming up on 19 years.
I know. Shut up, asshole.
But
my point is we felt like we had a reasonable situation. But I remember coming in and all of us who were seniors in 94 looking around going like, we can do so much better. We're gonna be the Titans that make the change. We're gonna change the way things are done around here. And I felt like we did that. And you handed it off to those guys in 95. And actually our thought was, oh my God, there's so many of us graduating. These guys are screwed. But then they kept it going. A little fluke in 96, but then they got another national title in 97. It was impressive to watch the down year 98 by Nebraska standards, at least at that time. Then they won another conference title and had an incredible season in 99.
And by the way, they should have won the title in 99.
Yeah, they really should.
That 99 team, if Dan Alexander
it was a good
and
year.
Karell Buchalter don't fumble like four or five times at Texas, they win the damn thing.
Yeah, they do. They really do.
And what they did to Philip Fulmer's Tennessee Volunteers in the Fiesta Bowl that year. I mean, it was clear they were the best.
There was a period of time there where freaking Tennessee that was like Nebraska playing one of the Florida schools in the Orange Bowl and losing. Tennessee was like, oh, dear God, we got to go play Nebraska in a bowl game again. This is just unfair. Anyway, I think that's where a lot of this pain comes from these former players. As you look at, there was a conscious decision to be as good as we were.
You know,
we sat around and said, how good do we want to be? This is how good we want to be. What do we have to do? What price do we have to pay to get that good? And it was a very, I don't think people realize how calculated a decision that was. Yeah. To make the sacrifices we had to make to be as good as we were.
Now,
and all of that went away. And I think especially the guys in 97, when they look at the foundation that got laid before them, what they had to do to keep it going, might have even been harder, because it's winning that first one might be the easiest. It's turning around and doing it again and again and again. That's where the difficulty lies. And those guys in 97 experienced, they were there for all of it. They were all, not all, but most of those guys were there in 93. And when they look at Frost, they're looking at a guy who, while he wasn't there in 93, he might have had the toughest row to hoe, because he was the guy who came in as a transfer. Go read the World Herald. Was that Dirk's article?
It was, yeah.
So Dirk Chatelain's article.
It might have been a Henry Cordes. I don't know who wrote it, but they republished it. It was a republished
from
2012.
With a little additional information to it. When you look at what he had to go through, and it was across the board, I really don't think it was from the coaching staff. I think Osborne very intentionally put a lot on Scott's shoulders. But I think few people believed in Scott more than Osborne did. I think Osborne was all in on Frost. He had to convince the players around him. He had to convince the fans. He had to convince the media. And it was a very painful process for the guy. So when I look at Frost, I think all of these guys who were in his class, those guys who were all seniors in 97 with Scott, I think they look at him, and very few people have as true an understanding of what Frost had to go through, the price he had to pay going to Stanford, transferring back, having to prove himself all over again. There are few people that believe in him more than those 97 guys, but I think it's because they're the only people that have as in-depth and as true an understanding of the pain, the suffering, the work, the effort that this guy had to put in to do what he did at Nebraska. When you talk about all-time great Nebraska quarterbacks, there's like four at the very top, in my opinion. And it's Taggy, Behringer, Frazier, and Frost.
Crouch wouldn't be up there. Crouch won a Heisman.
What did he not win?
National title.
Boom.
Should have, though. 99 wasn't his fault.
It wasn't.
In 2001, they ran into a really good Miami team in the national title game.
They did. And a really good Colorado team.
Yeah.
But
let me say
here's
this.
It's one of those. What do you judge a quarterback on?
Titles.
Championships. Because to win a championship, you've got to be able to do what they did at Missouri in 97. You've got to be able to when Scott Frost came around, I think it was in the Washington game, and threw that massive block on a reverse. You got to be able to do that. Scott Frost was every bit as good a ball carrier as any running back on the team that year. Well, maybe not Amon Green, but you look at what he did is the reason they won that championship. They don't win that championship in 97 without Scott. They don't win that championship with Frankie London. I don't know. Maybe you don't agree with me there. You think they win the national title with Frankie London?
No.
Okay. Well, that's my point is that's why Scott's one of the top four all time, in my opinion, because he had what it takes to win a championship. And I appreciate what Crouch did. The guy was an amazing athlete. He was going to go down as one of the best option quarterbacks in history. He's one of the all-time greats. Why is Troy Aikman in the NFL Hall of Fame?
Won Super Bowls.
Won championships. Was Terry Bradshaw that good statistically?
Statistically, no, but the guy was a gamer.
Did he win championships?
Won championships. Here's all I know.
Most pundits looked at Peyton Manning and said he needed that final Super Bowl win with Denver to be considered an all-time great. Just so he could get a second championship.
All I know is this. You played the game. You're the X's and O's guy. You understand that portion of it. I'm an outsider, and I know this. The only way you're going to return to greatness is with stability. The next coach will be the fifth head coach in the last 20 years. With stability comes confidence, comes an identity. You cannot be changing coaches every 3 years, every 4 years, every 5 years. You have to find the right fit. This was a downward spiral that started with Steve Peterson back in 2003 and has been going downhill until you return.
I'll give you that, but let me ask you this. They had fucking stability at Oregon State.
Yeah, but the expectation
and a 500 record during all of that stability.
It's not an apples to oranges comparison because that's all Oregon State expected. Let's say Matt Campbell stays at Iowa State for the next 20 years. He's going to win 8 games this year. That's hitting a home run. Their expectations would never be higher than that.
And I'll give you that.
So Scott would bring that stability. I think he would have a much longer leash. And because he's so wanted, he's going to get whatever he wants. I mean, it is the red carpet. You do whatever you want. But you got to have stability because that comes with an identity. And Nebraska has not had an identity in a long time, and it sure as hell hasn't had stability.
Be nice to have both.
Yes, it would. Before we get into listener email, I'm not going to play the Bob Diaco comments because I thought they were so incoherent. But here's what...
I'm still laughing
about it. You want to know why the guy got
Jason fired? Jason texted me that after the game. We were going back and forth about who's at fault more, the offense or defense, and it was very tongue-in-cheek. And Jason Tech gave me that text. He said, hey, here's all the ammo you need for Nebraska's defense. And I remember reading it late Saturday night, and all I could think was just, the hell is this guy talking about?
You
want to
know
about
why he got fired at UConn after 3 years?
Is that.
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 That right there. I do an Iowa show every day. I said, Iowa fans know. I said, distance yourself from this guy. Don't even call him
a
former
Hawkeye. Why didn't you tell me that? You never said that shit to me. You're like, oh, he's an Iowa guy. You're going to love him.
At the end of the day, he was in the right place with Brian Kelly when he was at Cincinnati and Notre Dame. It's like he was a protected – he was one of these guys that smoke and mirrors. He went to UConn, and you try to start this – rivalry of Central Florida where Scott just left the trophy on the
sidelines. This guy's on acid, dude.
He's a whack job.
This guy's Robbie Rotten from Lazy Town, which if you've got kids, you know what I'm talking about. but crossed with Mike Myers, Dr. Evil.
So here's what Mike Riley had to say, kind of related to Bobby Diaco's comments, which we're not going to play because they're incoherent.
You know, I mean, we made a structural change. The adaptation of players into the system has been a big job for our staff. And we did it for, you know, I had made mention to you and to all of you that we did it with our goal of being better. And we are growing to that, not necessarily past it yet.
Do you think he believes his own bullshit?
No.
Okay, that's all I wanted to hear you say.
No. That's just, yeah, I'm listening to that just going like, because you want to know what? Right there, even Riley is going, I don't know what the hell he said.
I mean, he's not going to throw his defensive coordinator under the bus. He's not going to do it.
No.
Did Diaco throw his players under the bus, or did he throw the offensive coaches under the bus by saying, listen, we were
I don't
just
know.
Fine.
It's one or the other, but either way, it's bad. Now, I'm looking to see who wrote it.
You look it on Twitter. Of course, you can follow Dr. Rob on Twitter at.
It is.
Doc
I mean,
Talk
it's from almost. I mean, it's from the World Herald's column about it. I feel horrible. I'm looking up to see who.
Well, while you're looking that up, I'm going to tell you that.
Well, I mean, was it actually? I think it was. God, was that Barfnecht? Was it?
While you're looking that up, I'm going to say that Nebraska
might have
playing,
been Sam McEwen. Anyway, hey, so I mean, during so here's the quote. I'm sorry, I'm interrupting you.
No, I was just going to. While you were
okay,
looking at
it,
I was
okay, so
gonna
here
kill
it is. So
time.
It says so to suggest there's no reason to expect better. So again, this is coming from the Omaha World Herald. Come on, Diaco may use a lot of words to say it, but the translation is, it ain't me you're looking for, babe. Hogwash. Diaco was, and this is the key line here, Diaco was brought here to improve Nebraska's defense immediately with urgency. Riley said as much before the season. Riley had no time in year three to regress. It was a gamble he made, or one that a former boss exhorted him to make. And Diaco, however melodious a sonnet he can speak on defensive theory, has not delivered a better defense than his predecessor, Banker.
Who wrote that?
Sam McEwen.
Okay.
So, yeah, so this it was McEwen's column in the World Herald today. And it was... You know, and I like Sam. Sam phrased that as well as it could possibly said in regards to the sense that Diaco was brought here to fix things immediately with a sense of urgency, and for the defense to regress would be the death knell of Riley's tenure here. Here's the thing. I kind of understand what Diaco is saying, in the sense that he has this incredibly god-awfully complicated defensive scheme. And if it is executed perfectly by high-level, high-thinking players, now it's got to be incredibly high-level, high-thinking players with monstrous amounts of talent, that scheme can stop everybody and everything.
See, I thought he was saying if they just would have kicked a field goal and not thrown an interception at the end, you wouldn't be asking me these questions. Why didn't we save the day again? This game was won, and you're going to put it back on me?
You gave up 232 yards rushing exactly. Against a team that you had no business giving that kind of yardage to. I can't repeat Jason's quote about Thorson. It's kind of funny, but he said that it was basically that bleepity bleep couldn't hit the ocean standing on the beach. And he's right. Why didn't you put eight or nine guys in the box and force them to throw to Austin Carr, who's not on the team anymore? Why not? The guy's a guaranteed pick machine. I mean, he's the only guy in the conference who can come close to Lee when it comes to throwing interceptions.
So,
except he doesn't have half of Lee's arm strength. Diaco's, I understand what he's saying. If his ungodly complicated defense is positioned with not just NFL, but high-end NFL talent, if he's got like Ray Lewis's and Deion Sanders at every spot, they'll shut everybody down. But guess what? Nobody, not even NFL teams, are that loaded across the board. It's the equivalent of asking freaking J. Robert Oppenheimer and Einstein to go down and
teach. You just lost half this audience.
Sorry. To go down and teach a nuclear physics class to a bunch of seventh graders. Will they be wrong? No. Everything they teach will be right.
But
guess what? Everybody in that class of seventh graders is going to flunk physics that year because they're going to have no clue what the hell they're being taught because it's too far over everybody's heads.
So up next for the Huskers is going to be Minnesota. We're not going to spend any time talking about the Golden Gophers because, well, that team sucks just as bad as Nebraska does right now. Minnesota has one Big Ten win that came against Illinois. It's lost to Maryland. It lost to Purdue. It lost to Michigan State. Oh, the three-point game. Beat Illinois 24-17. Lost at Iowa. Lost at Michigan. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about Minnesota because this game isn't really worth talking about.
It's not, but I'll say this. Watch out. You got a wounded Nebraska team. You don't think they don't know what's going on behind
the
scenes?
Rowing the boat, baby. They're rowing the boat.
You don't think they don't know what's going on with the coaching staff?
They do.
They've been through this shit before.
Yes, they have.
The seniors have,
at least. They had to go through it last year in a bowl game.
Yeah.
Timeout. Oh, go ahead.
No, it's just my point is they're going to go up to Minnesota. And you got a team in Minnesota that's just going to line it up and say, screw it, what else do we have to lose? And they're just going to hand the ball off every single freaking play. They're going to get 232 yards rushing also, and they have a chance if they do that.
Is there any more beer left?
Yeah.
All right.
Cause it's pretty good.
Because we're 50 minutes into this, baby, and we got time now for listener email. Brandon from Sandy Creek says, some people are concerned about making coaching changes too often and too soon. What is your opinion on this? Oklahoma did before landing Stoops. Alabama did before landing Saban. Why can't we? I'm going to answer this one, Rob, and then you can answer. What's the point of firing Mike Riley right now?
No, when you say right now, do you mean with three games left?
With three
or
games.
Do you?
What's the point? You don't get anywhere.
I don't think firing them in season gains you anything at this, not in this day and age.
Because I think people really think, and these are ignorant people.
Because I think Riley's already been told he's done, and I think there's already a contract sitting on Scott Frost's desk with an answer expected first week in December.
But Scott Frost would never take that job until his regular season was over.
No, I know. And that's, and I'm,
but I think people think he would.
And I'm, no, I don't think so.
I think there are people out there who don't understand the process.
Who think Scott's going to show up in Lincoln in December?
Yeah, no, who would show up in November. Or at least say, hey, I'm going to finish out here, but I'm going. People,
nah,
trust me, follow social media. I'm not saying the majority of people. Some people think,
okay,
fire him now and hire Scott. Well, it doesn't work that way.
I think they do, but you just keep it on the down low.
Yeah.
I think that's happened, at least the firing Riley part.
Brandon, at the end of the day, you don't get anywhere, and there's nobody to really run the program right now.
But I think he's also asking the question, is there harm in making these changes every 3 to 5 years like they've done? And I said, and you talk about the stability, and I said, you know, if you've got a program like Nebraska – and you're nice and stable, but that stability is Mike Riley, where you're winning an average of 6.5 games a year, you don't want that stability. Make the damn change. And I think Nebraska has already made it. Like I said, we don't have that. I mean, we don't have that on paper yet, but.
Danny in North Platte says, over the course of the last few games, I've observed Coach Riley on the sideline doing things like applying chapstick and taking time to fish a wrapper out of his pocket to dispose his used gum, all during game action. I know I'm being picky, and I respect Coach Riley, but does it seem like at times he's a bit detached from the game, and his players especially?
That's kind of an interesting question. I don't think Riley is... He's not the hands-on guy that I think...
He's a CEO type.
He's a CEO type. He's not the hands-on guy that Osborne was, which Osborne was the head coach. He was the offensive coordinator. He was the quarterback's coach. He was calling plays. Although even Osborne had time to throw another stick of Big Red in his mouth. See. So, but yeah, I think there is a little bit of that detachment. I don't know if it's good or bad. I think they're CEO-type head coaches. Barry Switzer was a CEO-type head coach. And I know nobody looks at Barry Switzer and goes, CEO? But that was his thing. He was great at recruiting. He was a big-picture guy.
Great with the media.
He was outstanding with the media. But you know what? On and on, I don't even know who his offensive coordinator was, but he had a... Oh, God, what was his name? Took over as head coach after he was...
Gary Gibbs.
Thank you.
He was Gary, the defensive coordinator.
Had Gary Gibbs as the defensive coordinator. And he let those guys kind of run the show. Now, I think Switzer was one of those guys who had a very good offensive mind when it came to running option football and kind of brought his coordinators up with that same mindset. But I think once the game started, he kind of turned everything over to the coordinators and went from there.
Jeff wants to know, if Bill Moose hires Frost at the end of the season, will there be a little voice inside you wondering if he actually just aligned himself with popular demand? If he hires somebody else, quality coach worthy of Nebraska, does that same voice rest easier with the assumption that Moose went through a diligent search that led him to the best possible choice?
Let me ask you this. Who else are you going to go with? Because you also want somebody who has a feel for what the culture's like in Lincoln. Now, when I say that, I'm not saying you've got to follow the Rob Zadiska methodology of going with this complete Woody Hayes 3 yards cloud of dust mentality offensively like Alvarez instituted up in Wisconsin. But you want somebody who knows what it's like dealing with the fans here. You want somebody who's grown up here. You want somebody who can deal with the boosters. You want somebody with a breadth of experience in the coaching world. And there's few guys as young as Scott that have that. And I keep thinking, God, it'd be really great to get... You don't want a Mike Riley. We all want the next Osborne. And those are hard to get, but you want the next Osborne, the next Bob Stoops, the next Urban Meyer. You want to find that young up-and-coming guy, and you want to get him when he's in his late 30s, early 40s. Keep in mind, by Scott's age, Tom Osborne had already been coaching at Nebraska for what? Half a dozen years.
So because Scott's 42, a new baby's on the way. Right now, there is nobody else. You're not going to have a lot of people lined up.
Do you want Jim McElwain?
Listen, there's nobody else.
Do you want Kevin Sumlin?
Do you want?
How about Butch Jones?
I mean, at the end of the day, people aren't lining up for the Nebraska job because I don't think they look at it as that great of a job.
I think Chip Kelly would be interesting as all hell. But I also, again, we've talked about this. I think he's a happy feet guy. I think he's going to go to, like, UCLA.
Which, put him back in the Pac-12, knows the area.
Yeah, I think he's going to go to UCLA, and he's going to turn UCLA into a freaking monster. It's going to be Oregon South, except even better access to recruits now.
Rich in Sherwood, Illinois, more or less has a statement. Though I think highly of Mike Riley, I can't see that changing with his current offensive coaches. Kavanaugh and Langsdorf appear oblivious to how offense needs to function. Additionally, with the strength coach and four assistants, someone needs to be held accountable for the lack of conditioning and the flood of injuries. Some level of injury is probably unavoidable, but as Rob noted, every play is fast becoming a hold-your-breath moment. I remember reading about members of the Husker teams in the 90s running themselves near exhaustion day after day so that the game was relatively easy by comparison. Where is that spirit?
Not in Lincoln. That's about all I've got. Yeah, you know, he's right. I mean, I can go back and start talking about football war stories and what we did and some of the stupid shit we did. And I say that in the sense of I had a sprained ankle that Dr. Claire told me I shouldn't even be walking on for 2 weeks, and somehow I managed to convince the trainers to just fiberglass cast my foot, and I went out and played with it.
A doctor. You know what you're talking about.
Not the smartest thing to do. Now, that being said, Coach Osborne had a rule. We weren't allowed to get hurt, so you just didn't get injured. I say that tongue-in-cheek. You know what? I thought we were better conditioned. We were in better shape. We were a lot bigger, a lot stronger, and far faster than these guys. That's saying something, because that was over 20 years ago.
Yeah, you were better athletes than these guys.
That's insane. You would think in almost 25 years something might have changed here, that there might have been further development. We were stronger than these guys. That's mind-blowing to me when I look at Nebraska's offensive line, and all I can think is, these guys would have been third stringers when I was in Lincoln.
Steven wants to know, if Scott Frost does end up as Nebraska's head coach, what are your thoughts about how well his offense will work in the Big Ten? I know UFC runs the ball a lot with great success by spreading the players out and getting defenders out of the box, but do you think it is physical enough style to work against the better defenses in the Big Ten like Ohio State and Wisconsin?
I really do. Now, the reason I say that is because I think it's a very adaptable offense that he runs. And I think you even look at, okay, so here's a good example. Now, I know it's not Scott that I'm talking about, but you look at Chip Kelly, and everybody thought Chip Kelly was going to, when Kelly went to the NFL and started off with the Eagles, everybody thought he was going to run some weird version of this Oregon option offense in the NFL. And he didn't. He was highly intelligent about it. He took the Philadelphia Eagles, and he ran a pro-style offense, and he kind of sped it up a little bit. I mean, he did a lot of no huddle. He did a lot of hurry up, and he had a fair amount of success with that. And I think Chip Kelly's undoing revolved far, far more around personnel decisions and the moves he made through trades, free agency, and the draft than it did with his play calling and how he was as a coach. It was the personnel decisions he made that I think tanked him as an NFL coach, not the actual coaching.
Let me give an example. I think if you look at Ohio State's offense, JT Barrett runs the zone read a lot. They spread it out. Look at Penn State, especially with McSorley and Barkley. I mean,
I wholeheartedly agree. Look at Alabama, which historically has run a pro-style offense with a big emphasis on the running game. They've done a lot of different things. They won a national title with Lane Kiffin as the offensive coordinator, running sort of a mock-up spread offense. You can win at any level with that. And I think they would be fine in the Big Ten as long as that emphasis on the running game is maintained.
Beth gets the final question tonight. Hey, guys, heard your thoughts on the prevent defense and couldn't agree more. My question is, after watching so many teams drive down the field and score against a prevent defense, why do coaches still use it? Is it a cultural coaching thing ingrained into their brains?
I agree that last statement. That's it. Right there. And it's, you know, I think a little bit of it's human nature, too. I mean, what you said right there from a cultural coach, you think coaches are stupid, stubborn. That's just their mindset. Some of it's nothing other than human nature. You kind of, when somebody's coming at you a mile a minute like that, you kind of want to take that step back, and your fear turns more to, causes you to turn more to a cautious nature than that aggressive nature. Even though the aggressive nature on a football field defensively tends to work better. It works better offensively too. How many times have you seen an offensive coach get a big lead and the line we always use, they take the foot off the gas pedal. And all of a sudden the other team starts coming back. It's like, hey, let's start running more and try and grind it out. Even though we gashed them with the pass the whole first half and built up a 3-touchdown lead, we're not going to be as aggressive offensively in the second half, since we want to hold on to this big lead. We don't want to turn the ball over. We don't want a quick 3-and-out, even though you didn't have turnovers and 3-and-outs in the first half when you're racking up those points.
You know, by the way, I need to say congratulations. You had a good weekend. Your Michigan State Spartans beat Penn State. And I haven't really said that much, but give me some props. My Hawks look pretty good.
Okay, I'm going to say this to you, and I hope you take this the right way. Screw you, dude. And here's why. Because you and I were hanging out and talking after recording last week's podcast, and I'm going to quote you. You said, Hawkeyes suck, dude. They are not good. And what did I say to you?
You said they have you listen.
What did I say to you?
Cannot a fan pick on their own team.
This is off the air after the podcast.
Cannot a fan pick on their own team.
What did I say to you?
You said they got talent.
I said they're still a good team. I said Iowa's got some ball players. And I said, they are a good team. Don't count them out.
This is going to drive you nuts. Noah Fant just set a record for the most single-season touchdowns by a tight end in Iowa history. You know how many good tight
ends? That's actually saying something.
You know how many good tight ends have come through that school?
Oh, I still sit here like
here's the deal, son of a bitch
and under my breath about the fact that Nebraska didn't have their shit together enough to get him to go to Lincoln.
Now, would you explain to Iowa fan that I am?
Hold on, I want you to admit.
I did
that. I told you off the air that I.
But this is
that
how,
I disagreed with you and said no. Iowa's actually a pretty good team. Don't count them out against the Buckeyes.
Iowa fans are getting. Iowa fans are now listening to this podcast. They called my bosses at the Iowa radio station I work for, because I host the Iowa Hawkeye post-game call-in show, and said, how can you have him host this show? He said the Hawks suck. And I'm like, are you serious? He goes, you're not a fan. You're a Husker fan. I go, listen. I go, I don't think, if you listen to this podcast enough,
you spent years covering Nebraska football, and all anybody could say is like, God, Travis sucks ass. We hate his guts.
I know.
He's a Hawkeye fan and he hates the Huskers.
and that's what I do.
We hate Travis. He hates the Hawkeyes.
Listening to this podcast, and if I say anything negative, and I was down on the Hawks, A, because they lost to Northwestern.
Hey,
in overtime.
Iowa fans, Travis does not believe in the Hawkeyes.
Shut up.
I do. Travis admitted 2.5 minutes ago that I was the one that said I thought Iowa's got a shot against Ohio State when he didn't
believe.
You didn't
see a 30-point win over Ohio State.
That actually, I found some. You know what? I thought it was going to be another game like Penn State, and I could actually see Iowa pulling it out. And part of it is, I'll admit this.
I don't know if I could see. Nobody saw that coming, though.
I didn't. No, I did. You know, the best was you saw the newspaper headline, the Woodshed, Iowa, and then the zip code for Iowa City. Greatest headline ever. That was freaking awesome. Here's the thing. I kind of in my head felt there was a chance that Iowa had a shot. And I also felt that Michigan State had a shot. And the reason is you look at that Ohio State Michigan State game. Well, not that, but the Ohio State I'm sorry, I said Michigan State, but the Ohio State Penn State game. Games like that, when they're that big of a game and they're that hard fought and that close of a game, God, they are physically and emotionally draining. And to go right back out the next week and play a team like Iowa that I still feel has a lot of talent.
And they're young.
They're young. It's got a lot of talent, and they're exceptionally well coached. you got, they're going to have a chance. Ohio State and Penn State were both, I think, physically and emotionally gutted after the game the week before. Now, that I'm not taking anything away from Iowa. In the proverbial Rob Zadiska's favorite line ever, that was a dirt road ass kicking. Ohio State comes into this game completely on the ball, mentally well prepared, physically in peak condition, and Iowa does exactly what they did. Iowa's still winning that game, hands down, going away. I truly believe that. They beat the shit out of them, and it was because they were a better team on that day, more disciplined. And here's the best thing. Did you listen to Urban Meyer's press conference?
It lasted 3 minutes and 37 seconds.
And the key point that I got out of it was he said, and I don't know if he said it was the first time, but he said it was at least one of the few times one of his teams anywhere had been beat in the trenches.
Hey.
We physically got our ass kicked on the line.
Well, and you and I have talked about it several times, and I know Husker fans don't like me talking about Iowa because they know I'm an Iowa fan, but we've talked about the Nebraska offensive line so much. Look at Iowa's offensive line against Ohio State, and it was one right there. That was the offensive line that people have been waiting to see if you're an Iowa fan. And
Stanley had time. Yep. Waddling Co. head holes.
And it shows you that a pro-style offense, if you have the players,
see, now work. Here's the thing. What the hell is up with all this anti-pro-style offense?
Because it doesn't work here. It hasn't worked here.
What Mike Riley runs is not a pro-style offense. Well, it kind of is, but there's a lot.
That's a podcast for another day.
There's a lot of lot of key components missing there.
He's Dr. Rob Zadiska. I'm Travis Justice. Make sure to follow Dr. Rob on Twitter at DocTalkSports. If you have questions you want to send us, we always try to answer the emails on our latest podcast. You can send those to DocTalkSports@gmail.com. Nebraska, Minnesota coming up on Saturday. We'll have another podcast coming up in another week. I hope you enjoyed the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.
Thank you very much.